Well, you can go to John chapter 16. Last week we read through the whole chapter, and it was an interesting chapter, and I'd like to recap it a bit. Jesus Christ spoke about the receiving of Holy Spirit. He spoke about the Comforter would come, and then it would lead them into all truth. He also spoke to the disciples about, his upcoming trial and problems and how he was going to die. He told them that if they asked anything of God in his name, the Father would do it for them or give it to them. And he told them plainly that he came from God, but that he would leave and go to the Father. So those are some of the things in chapter 16. And that was at the end of the Last Supper. The Last Supper, in Jesus Christ, our Passover, Dr. Worrell believed that the Last Supper occurred in Bethany. So after the Last Supper in chapter 16, he was talking to them about all these things. And that's, at the time he told of someone betraying him, right? Well, we're going to start in verse 29 again, just to see the end of it. And his disciples said unto him, Lo, now speakest thou plainly, and speaketh no proverb or parable. Now we are sure that thou knowest all things, and needest not any man that any man should ask thee. By this we believe that thou camest forth from God. So after all the time they've spent, and now they say, well, now we really believe that you're from God. And then Jesus Christ says, he answered them, do you now believe? Like, I think he was shocked. And finally they said, yeah, we believe. So then he goes on to say, behold, the hour cometh, yea, now is now come, that ye shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone, and yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. So they profess that they believe him, that he's the Christ, that he's from God. And then he says, well, you know, the hour is here when I'm going to face the biggest challenge of my life, and you're going to leave, and I'm going to be alone, but God's going to be with me. These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation or anguish. But be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. And the word overcome is the word Nikeo, which is, Nike or victory. And of course, in 1 John 4:4, it says, he that is in you is, or how's it go?
Greater is
he that is in you than he that is in the world. So I should just read it, right? Because it has the word overcome. It says, ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Meaning you have the victory over them, over, the forces of evil. And then in chapter 5, verse 4, it says, for whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, or has the victory over the world. And this is the victory, that we overcometh the world, even our believing. Who is it that overcometh the world? But he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God. So he told them that. And of course, in 1 Corinthians 15, it talks about how we have victory in Christ. So then they start walking to the garden. And, we don't know exactly how far, but Bethany is about between 1.5 and 2 miles from Jerusalem. And he's walking along. In chapter 17, Jesus Christ continues to talk to the disciples, and he prays. And this is all after the Last Supper, and they're on their way to the Garden of Gethsemane. Now, we're not going to read that prayer because it will take too long, but I would encourage you to read that prayer. It's not in the garden. It's he's praying while he's on the way with his disciples. So now we're going to go to Matthew 26. And as we get down, wind down here to, you know, the greatest challenge and trial of Jesus Christ's life, we're going to take a little more time with the details to see what really happened. So Matthew 26, and we're going to begin in verse 31. Then saith Jesus unto them, all ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. And that's a citation from Zechariah 13:7. So this is again on the road to the garden, and he says, you know, you're going to be offended because of me. Or stumble. That word offended could mean to stumble. And verse 32, but after I am risen again, I will go before you unto Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Wow. So Peter is disagreeing with Jesus Christ. He's saying, okay, you know, you're saying we'll all be offended, we'll all stumble because of you, but I will never, ever. That's what he said. Peter answered and said unto him, though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet I will never be offended. I will never stumble because of you. Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this night before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. Which means what? Three times. Verse 35, Peter said unto him, though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise also said all his disciples. So let's go to Mark chapter 14 and read the similar or same record, actually. And we're going to start in verse 30. And it says, and Jesus saith unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this day, even in this night, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. Okay? In Jesus Christ, our Passover, in page 136, it says, a close study of the denials of Peter clearly demonstrates that Peter denies the Lord six times. There were two separate cock crowings with three denials before each. So we're not going to study that whole thing, but that's what it says there, and it's a good thing to read about it. Then in verse 31 here, so let's read 30 again. Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this day, even in this night, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. But he spake the more, but he, Peter, spake the more vehemently, if I should die with thee, I will not deny thee in any wise. I likewise also said they all. So Peter said, I will never deny you. And, he, you know, he's going against Jesus, what Jesus Christ is telling him. And then all the other disciples side with Peter. It's amazing, isn't it? He teaches them all this stuff. They said, we truly believe that you're the Son of God. Everything you say is the truth. And then he tells them something, they say, well, that's not true. That's what they did, right? I mean, it's in the same conversation, the same night as they're walking to the garden. Let's go back to Matthew 26. It's amazing how quickly they forgot. Matthew 26 again. And we're going to begin in verse 36, or pick it back up in verse 36. Mm. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and said unto his disciples, Sit ye here, while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, which would be John and James, right? And began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. So he asks Peter and James and John to watch with him as he goes to pray. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh again, or he cometh unto the disciples, and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. So I guess Peter got his comeuppance there. So Peter, James, and John all fell asleep. And Jesus Christ says to him, You couldn't just stay awake for 1 hour and pray with me? And then he says, You know, your flesh is weak. Okay. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, Oh, my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. So he kept saying the same words. He saw what was coming. He saw how hard it was going to be. God showed him. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, if there's a different way we can go, let's do it. You know, there's a great thing here. You can pray and ask God for anything. We always talk about praying, and God tells us what's available. But sometimes we don't know what's available, right?
Right.
And so we can pray and ask God for things, but then we also have to be humble enough to believe what he tells us. And we should always have the heart and the desire to do what he wants us to do. And that was Jesus Christ's example here. Even though the situation was extremely difficult and he was in great sorrow and he knew what he was going to face, he said, Your will be done, not mine, yours. Hold your place here and go to Luke 22 for a second. Luke 22 and verse 43. Well, let's read verse 42. Again, he's praying and he's saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. What we just read in Matthew, right? And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. So God sent an angel to strengthen him, to encourage him, to assure him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was as if it were great drops of blood falling down to the ground. Now, that's a figure of speech. It's as drops of blood, right? It wasn't blood, but it was, you know, showing the agony of what he was going through. So let's go back to Matthew 26, and we'll pick it up in verse 45 where we left off. Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. And then he says, rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. So, how's that? A great multitude. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. Now let's go to John chapter 18. We're going back and forth because this is how it goes chronologically in the Gospels, because each Gospel has a little different details, or a few different details. Chapter 1 of 18. And we'll be in here for a while. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where was a garden, unto which he entered and his disciples. So now we're going back a little bit to the beginning. And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oft times resorted thither with his disciples. It was a place where he liked to go. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. So we saw before it was a multitude. Here it just says a band. And they have torches and weapons. You know, they're coming to get a man that is, you know, not a warrior, not somebody that's doing anything violent. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, whom seek ye? So, you know, between the time they entered the garden in verse 1 and the time that this people came is, you know, where Jesus Christ prayed and Peter and John and James fell asleep, and he goes through that and he prayed for an hour. And then he gets up and he knows that they're coming to get him. And so then he comes out and the people come and he says, whom seek ye? Verse 5, they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus saith unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them, with the multitude, with the band. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. So here's this multitude of people. In verse 3, it says a band, and the word band is used of a cohort, which is a group of soldiers made up of a number of, centurion had 100 soldiers, right? So there would be a number of centurions under a chief captain. The word chief captain is used in Acts when Paul gets arrested, and he had centurions under him. So a cohort or a band would be anywhere from 400, 600, up to 1,000 soldiers. So there would be, you know, the chief captain, and then there would be centurions under him. And when they came to him, they asked who he was. Jesus Christ stepped forward and said, who seeketh thee? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And he goes, I am he. And those guys that came in the front fell backwards. They were shocked. They fell to the ground. Then asked he them again, whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, let these go away. These being his disciples, his companions. That the saying might be fulfilled which he spake, of them which thou gavest me, I have lost none. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, well, we'll stop there for a second. And we'll go to Luke 22 again. And in verse 47, "And while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he that was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said unto him, Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss? When they, which were about him, saw what would follow, they said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with the sword? And one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear." And so a couple of things here. Judas betrayed Jesus Christ with a kiss. A kiss was supposed to be, you know, it talks in the epistles about greet the saints with a holy kiss, right? So it's kind of an irony that he betrays Jesus Christ with a show of affection for a friend. And Jesus Christ even called him friend in the Gospel of John, I believe. So in Jesus Christ, our Passover, page 146, it says, the Aramaic reads, my friend, for this are you come to me, meaning this greeting of a kiss. So let's go back to Matthew now, 26. Verse 50. And Jesus said unto him, friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of them, which were with Jesus, stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Okay. The word there says that the ear, he cut the ear, wasn't completely severed. So whatever the word is in Greek, it means cut. It doesn't mean severed. But he smote his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Now that's a saying or a phrase that's used all the time. Mm-hmm. And people talk about, you know, if you live by the sword, you'll die by the sword. Well, that's not a principle being stated here. It has to do with the specific situation that's occurring at the moment that it occurred. Because here's Peter, a fisherman, and he wields a sword, and he's going up against a couple of hundred Roman soldiers who are trained to kill. And Jesus Christ said, if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. And he tells him to put up his sword. Then said Jesus, I'm put up the sword again, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? So Jesus Christ was, you know, all the stuff is going on. His disciples have to be scared to death. And he just stays calm and composed, and he deals with the situation because he knows what's going to happen and he knows what he needs to do. And then it says, verse 54, but how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled that thus it must be? In that same hour said Jesus to the multitudes, are you come out as against a thief with swords and staves to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and you laid no hold on me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. How many?
All of them.
Wow. Just like he told them. They said, we'll never forsake you, Jesus. No, we'll never be offended of thee. And what did they do? They took off. They left. In John 10, Jesus Christ talked about how nobody could take his life. He would lay it down. Right? They couldn't take until he's ready. He said here, you know, I was in the temple with you daily teaching and you never laid a hand on me. It wasn't that they didn't want to lay a hand on him. There was a number of times where they were ready to stone him or kill him, but he wasn't ready to let them. And so even if they had tried, they would have never gotten to him. A couple of times they picked up stones, but he just walked away. He walked through the crowd and left. So they all forsook him and they all fled. So this kind of ends the most maybe infamous arrest in the history of mankind. But this only occurred because Jesus Christ allowed it to happen and because he had to allow it to fulfill the scriptures. So the soldiers take him and the temple guards, and they take Jesus and all his disciples flee. But as they marched away, two men followed. So let's go to Mark chapter 14. It tells us about this. In verse 51. Well, verse 50, it says, they all forsook him and fled. And there followed him a certain young man having a linen cloth cast about his naked body, and the young men laid hold on him, and he left the linen cloth and fled from them naked. And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes. And Peter followed him afar off, even unto the palace of the high priest, and he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. The word palace there is not a palace, but it is a courtyard. It's a courtyard. That's what it says. Now we're going to go back. Let's see. To Mark. Where am I now? Mark 14. Go back to John 18. John 18. And we're going to pick up in verse 12. It says, then the band and the captain and officers of the Jews took Jesus and bound him and led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. So they took him not to the high priest first, but to Annas. Now Annas previously had been the high priest. Here it is. Okay. So Annas had been the high priest, and he was kind of a creepy guy and very subtle and sly and very political. And the Romans didn't like him. So they forced him out. But in his place, a couple of his sons became high priest, and by this time, Caiaphas, his son-in-law, became the high priest. So this is what it says about Annas. This is called The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah by Alfred Adersham. It says, and in those days it was, at least for one of Annas's disposition, much better to have been than to be the high priest. It was better for him to have been in the past the high priest than at that present time. He enjoyed all the dignity of the office and all of its influence also, since he was able to promote it to those most closely connected with him, his sons, his son-in-law. And while they acted publicly, he really directed affairs without either the responsibility or the restraints which the office imposed. In other words, he was the power, you know, in the shadows. He was the guy behind the throne. His influence with the Romans, he owed to the religious views which he professed, to his open partisanship of the foreigner, and to his enormous wealth. The Sadducean Annas, okay, he was a Sadducee. He wasn't a Pharisee, he was a Sadducee. And the Sadducees and the Pharisees were not friendly. They disliked each other, they were opposed to each other. They had a hard time. The Sadducean Annas was an eminently safe churchman, not troubled with any special convictions, nor with Jewish fanaticism, a pleasant and a useful man also, who was able to furnish his friends in the praetorium with large sums of money. We have seen what immense revenues the family of Annas must have derived from the temple booths. You know, the money changers, the guy that sold the animals, you know, all that stuff. Annas was getting a cut of everything. And how nefarious and unpopular was the traffic. The names of those bold, licentious, unscrupulous, degenerate sons of Aaron were spoken with whispered curses. Without referring to Christ's interference with that temple traffic, which, if his authority had prevailed, would of course have been fatal in it, or to it, we can understand how antithetic in every respect a Messiah, and such a Messiah as Jesus, must have been to Annas. In other words, he was a threat to his wealth and his power, his authority, his position. He went into the temple twice and threw out the money changers and the people selling the animals. He was as resolutely bent on his death as his son-in-law, though with the characteristic cunning and coolness, not in the hasty, bluff manner of Caiaphas. It was probably from a desire that Annas might have the conduct of the business, or from the active leading part which Annas took in the matter. Perhaps for even more prosaic and practical reasons, such as that the palace of Annas was nearer to the palace of Jesus' capture, and that it was desirable to dismiss the Roman soldiery as quickly as possible, that Christ was the first brought to Annas and not to the actual high priest. So that's Annas. And that's where they took Jesus Christ first. They took him to the courtyard of Annas's home. So back again, verse 12. And then the band and the captain, the officers of the Jews, took Jesus and bound him. So there were two groups here. There were the soldiers, and then there were the temple guards and the officers of the high priests and stuff like that. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. So Jesus Christ, our Passover, verse page 158, it states, from Jesus' arrest until his death was a period of approximately 40 hours. During this time, he was utterly humiliated, illegally tried, savagely tortured, and relentlessly mocked. Now, I was thinking about this because it's late at night, right? So he was up early that day, and because we know that he got up early in the morning. It says in Mark he got up before day and went out into a solitary place and there prayed. He didn't sleep a lot, apparently, in his life. But he was up early that day. He made his entrance into Jerusalem. Then they set up the Last Supper. He had the supper that night. He spent all that time. Then they walked a mile and a half or 2 miles to the Garden of Gethsemane. He prays for an hour. The disciples, by this time, were exhausted. They fall asleep. And then he gets arrested. And from that point on is another 40 hours. So he's already gone through maybe 16, 18 hours of that day. And now he's got to go through another 40 hours of torture. So when you think about it that way, it's like 40 hours would be bad enough. But he's already been up a long period of time, and he's had a very busy day. So, verse 15. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known unto the high priest, and went in with Jesus unto the palace of the high priest. Again, it's the courtyard. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. So that's one of his denials. And the servants and the officers stood there who made a fire of coals, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. So that's what he was doing there. The high priest then asked Jesus, and this would be Annas. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. He said, you know, what's your deal? What about your disciples? Jesus answered him, I spake openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple, whither the Jews always resort, and in secret have I said nothing. In other words, he said, you know, everything I teach, everything I have to say, I've said openly and I've taught. I didn't hide anything. Why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I said. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers, which stood by, struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, Answerest thou the high priest so? So he answers the high priest. And what happens? He gets hit. Again, in Jesus Christ, our Passover, it says, Thus began the interrogation of Annas. According to the legalities of the day, an accused person had the right not to testify against himself. We have that today in our Constitution. Judean law actually considered the testimony against oneself to be insufficient for conviction. An accused person had to be proven guilty by other witnesses. Yet these rights were repeatedly violated throughout the trial of Jesus, beginning here with Annas. So, we go on. Let's read 22 again. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, Answerest thou the high priest? You know, you answer him like that, you're being a wise guy? So, then Jesus Christ says, answered him, If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me? Now, the word struck with the palm of his hand is the Greek word rapisma, which means to slap sharply or to hit repeatedly with a rod. But then in verse 23, the word smitest is the word dero, and it means to skin or flay or scourge. So it seems like maybe this guy hit him with a rod and cut open his skin. Now Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas the high priest. And Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. They said therefore unto him, Art thou also one of his disciples? He denied it and said, I am not. And so, you know, he denied him again. So now let's go back to Matthew 26. Because now they're going to continue on. Verse 57, and they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him afar off into the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. So here it talks about the chief priests. That would supposedly be the line of Aaron. But we know with the appointment of Annas and then later his other ones, they weren't necessarily in the line of Aaron, but they took over, right? And they were Sadducees. The elders is another interesting word, and it doesn't really specifically say who the elders were. But the word elder goes back into most of the ancient civilizations, back to before Israel was a country, back to the Egyptians even, they had a term for elders, which just, it was a word that meant older people, but it also kind of went along with being wise. Now, in Exodus, what happened? God appointed 70 elders to help Moses rule, which seems to be the reason there were 70 in the Sanhedrin. But here it says, the chief priests, elders, and all the council. And all the council would refer to the Sanhedrin. So the elders could also refer to other judges or people in the religious government, whatever it is, of Israel, because the religion and the government were kind of intertwined. So there were elders and there was all the council, the Sanhedrin, and they sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. So they were looking for false witnesses. But they found none. And what does that mean, they found none? They found, they couldn't find two that agreed and corroborated each other. So hold your place here, because this is interesting what it says in the law. And we're going to go to Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17. Verse 6. And it's talking about two people that transgressed and should have had the sentence of death. In verse 6, it says, at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall he that is worthy of death be put to death. But at the mouth of one witness, he shall not be put to death. The hands of the witnesses shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterward the hands of all the people, so thou shalt put evil away from among you. And then go to chapter 19. In verse 15, it says, one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin, in any sin that he sinneth. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. If a false witness rise up against any man to testify against him, that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, before the priest and the judges, which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition, and behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brother, then shall he do unto him as he thought to have done unto his brother. So shalt thou put the evil away from among you. So if you're a false witness and you accuse somebody of something that requires death, and you're found out to be a false witness, then you suffer the penalty. So back to Matthew, I guess. So in verse 59, it said, you know, all the council, and then they found none. Verse 60, they found none. They couldn't find two that agreed. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses. Finally, they got two that agreed, that corroborated each other, that said the same thing. Wow. So this group, these people, the high priest, the elders, and this council was not interested in justice. They weren't interested in truth. They weren't even interested in their own law, you know, which they were so, you know, outwardly and in a false way, so dedicated to, you know. But when it suited them, they broke their own law. Their only desire was to get rid of Jesus Christ. Verse 61, and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days. Now, remember, Jesus Christ said that, but it says he was referring to his own body, that he would die and be raised up the third day. His temple, the temple of his body, was he was referring to, not the temple of God. And the high priest arose and said to him, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? So the high priest, when he heard this, stands up and he says, what is this that they witness against you? But Jesus held his peace. He didn't answer. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I abjure thee by the living God. I adjure thee is the intensive. In the NIV, it says, I charge thee under oath. In other words, Caiaphas is saying he's demanding Jesus Christ answer his question. He says, I adjure thee by the living God, you know, as God's our witness, that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus saith unto him, thou hast said, nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. What a great answer, huh? Yeah. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, he hath spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. So Caiaphas explodes in rage, and he rends his clothes, and, you know, he gets mad at Jesus Christ. Now, Jesus Christ's statement was true. The words that he spoke, we know, were given to him by God. And those words meant that his position and his authority were above the high priest. Yes. So that's what got him angry. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. I mean, here he is. He's just by himself. And then Caiaphas goes nuts and he rips his clothes. So just going to look at one more thing in Leviticus chapter 10, just to let you know what Caiaphas did here. That was exciting, whatever it was. In chapter 10, verse 6, it says, and Moses said unto Aaron and Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons, uncover not your heads, neither rend your clothes, lest ye die. unless wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord hath kindled. So here, you know, he's talking to Aaron and his sons, which were now the high priest. And he said, do not rend your clothes. You're not to do that ever. And then in chapter 21 of Leviticus, verse 10, it says, and he, that is a high priest, among his brethren, upon whose head the anointing oil was poured, and that is consecrated to put on the garments, shall not uncover his head nor rend his clothes. You're not to do that ever. What did Caiaphas do? He rent his clothes. He rent his mantle and yelled and screamed at Jesus Christ. So, and that's where we're going to stop. That's as far as we're going to go tonight with him before Caiaphas. And they've already set out, you know, that he's guilty. They've already prejudged him. They've already predetermined. It wasn't just a real trial. It was just a confirmation of what they wanted to do. They set out with the intent of putting him to death. And so they grabbed him. They got false witnesses. And they said, okay, this is it. We got him. But it was at the time when Jesus Christ said, okay, God told him, this is it. This is what you need to go through. So he's willing to do it. So we'll pick up the rest of the trial and move towards the terrible day of crucifixion the next time. But you know, you think about it. We read through all those different records about Jesus Christ and all the things he had to go through. And you know, it had to have prepared him. You know, it got him ready to deal with this at the final time. Because he stayed composed. I mean, he did have his time in the garden. He went to God. He was sorrowful. But God sent an angel to encourage him, to strengthen him. And then he moved on and he did exactly what he had to do. And he didn't get shaken. He didn't budge when they threatened him. He just did what God told him to do. What a great thing, huh? What an amazing thing. So, Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for loving us and blessing us and taking care of us. And we thank you in the great and wonderful name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.